the Approaching the Natural podcast with Sid Garza-Hillman. Sid is the author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, a certified nutritionist, health coach, and programs director at the Stanford Inns Wellness Center on the Mendocino coast of California.
Hello, small steppers. Sid here. Welcome to my podcast. I'm glad you're here. If you're just joining me for the first time, fantastic. And you know, if you've been here before, good on you for revisiting, because I'm glad to have you back. This podcast serves for many as a weekly reminder of how to stay in this small step game that I've crafted. And hopefully this podcast serves potentially that purpose for you if you're just joining me. There's a lot more going on there, but I think just jumping in now and then, or every week as the case may be, helps you stay engaged in the way that I'm talking about, and you'll get clear on, hopefully in this episode, but I can't guarantee that. I'm just saying it may get clear in this episode, but here's the beautiful part of the podcast medium is you don't have to wait for it to go into syndication, you know, like, oh, I don't know, Gilligan's Island, for instance. You don't have to go like, I really missed that episode where Gilligan can't get off the island, and then you have to wait for it to go into syndication, and you're living in 1974, which is kind of a hassle. And so now you can just go back to old episodes. You don't have to wait for syndication. And I'm sure that this podcast is going to be sought after by the major networks. There's no doubt in my mind that that's going to happen. I'm just waiting for the contracts to come through via fax. But in seriousness, you can go back to old episodes, get a sense of what we're doing here. The short story on this, if you're just joining me, is that I'm dedicating this podcast to helping people live better in the modern world via my unique small steps approach, which I will get into today, of course. Bringing attention to trends, to habits, to behaviors, to things that are keeping us from moving on in positive ways in our lives, empowering people to understand how much power they actually have. Through my small steps approach, helping people ease their way into maybe becoming aware of things that they have not wanted to become aware of. Being able to deal with the cryptic nature of me, for instance, is a good thing. Because I don't know, you're probably like, what's he talking about? What is he? You might even say hell. You might even go, what the hell is he talking about? It's okay. We're in a safe zone here, you guys. You can say hell. Got mushroom coffee. I was thinking before I hit record, I just have this obsessive need to just let you know what I'm drinking. I don't know where that, I don't even know where that comes from. I'll tell you what, it's not disrupting my life. And so that's sort of the small steppers way of like, is this getting in the way of my life? Is this getting in the way of my happiness and health? No, it's not. It's not. But I think people want to know. I don't know. I do get emails like, where did you get that mushroom coffee? Where's that come from? I've also gotten single malt scotch in the mail. So for me, it's not only not hindering, it's helping. So I'm just going to keep verbalizing what I'm drinking just for the sake of also. But the real practical reason, in case you're just joining me, is there's a break when I take a sip of something. And so I don't want it to be like dead space where you're just like, well, did he stop talking? Or did I hit stop on my tape recorder on which I listen to this podcast or my record player? Okay, so here's what we got. We got some quick announcements to make. I just want to give you a race update because it's blowing my mind. If you're just joining me for a few episodes, it was sponsored by my own race, so really not the best sponsorship. I'm like the worst marketer, so I'm like, I'll just get my own race to sponsor for nothing. Anyway, I sold out the race. You guys know that I announced it last week, and now I'm in the just the red zone. I'm too much of a softie, so like people were emailing me going, "Can I get in?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, okay." And so it's up to 114, which is kind of crazy and just nuts. Crazy and nuts. I dare I say nutty nut nut. I'm up to 114 and 9 people on the wait list, which I have not let in. It's really tough for me, you guys. This is not a joke, like not a game. I didn't want this many people in it. At the same time, torn, right? Because I want as many people as possible. It's like fantastic. But there's logistical realities to running putting on a race, directing a race for the first time ever. And I want to make sure my ducks are in a row and my bases are covered and all sorts of euphemisms to me being disorganized about this thing. But super cool. I actually got a call today from a guy in Healdsburg who runs the Healdsburg Running Company. And he's got some people coming up, a bunch of Healdsburg runners, which is very cool. But one of them guys, this is the coolest news ever. His name is John Mettinger. you guys may or may not know him. I know him because he owned Ultra Runner magazine, but I know him from the Lake Sonoma 50 race, which he's been putting on for years. And he's coming up for the frickin' race. His wife, she's the co-director of Lake Sonoma 50. She's running my race, running my frickin' race. And he's coming up. He's going to volunteer. He's going to help out. Huge, because if I don't need hand-holding, who does? That's what I'm talking about. I need some freaking hand-holding on this. So I wanted to just be like, what else did I forget? So anyway, very cool, 114 runners. There will be there. I'm sure I'll let in a few more. So if you're on the waiting list, just bear with me. I just want to wait for the dust to settle and like getting no more emails from people begging me. And then I can just be like, okay, here's how many I can let in. So it's a tough call because, of course, I would let everybody in. But I've only ordered so many trucker hats. What? Trucker hats? You bet your ass. Ordered freaking Mendocino Coast 50K trucker hats. Yes. Done and done. Thanks for the iTunes reviews. Wow. Just reading off the notes. SidGarzaHillman.com is my website. You can find out about me as a private health coach. I work with people all over the country in my unique way. If you have questions about that, you just throw me a podcast. I mean, wow. You just throw me an email at podcast@SidGarzaHillman.com if you want to find out about how I work. But on that website, you can donate to the podcast if you feel moved to support this podcast, which is great. Helps me keep the proverbial lights on. And you can also get t-shirts, mugs, and bracelets, and you can buy a custom signed copy of my book, Approaching the Natural Health Manifesto. Okay. All things social media, Twitter and Facebook and Twitter and tweeting and all the other companies that don't quite match up to Twitter and Facebook for the next 30 years, at Sid Garza Hillman. Okay? Just go to Sid Garza Hillman or Google it or whatever. Okay, great. But the two that I focus on, and you guys know this, Strava, which I'm not sponsored by, but damn it, I love the damn Strava. I'm loving the Strava. It should be called thestrava.com. Strava.com is where I am on. I'm getting followers all every week. I follow you right back. That's the deal. I don't care how much or how little exercise you're doing. Jump on there because it's fun and it's positive and it's no BS. Good. And also my favorite, YouTube. I got a new video in the works, you guys, which I'll get into in a little bit in this here episode. Quick last minute announcements. Stanford Inn Retreats. I run the Wellness Center at the Stanford Inn, and so you can go to stanfordinn.com to find out about all the retreats coming up March, June, October. I've got a running retreat with Matt Frazier, but there's cooking intensives and healthy living retreats with me and all sorts of cool stuff. I'll be in Marshall, Texas from April 1st to the 3rd. I looked at the schedule today. It's healthfest.com. I'm speaking twice on April 2nd is the lineup. They've got two talks in one day. I do a lot of singing in those talks. I hope I don't lose my voice. I actually don't know what I'm talking on either. They haven't announced the names of my talks. They've got my choices. They're going to have to choose. I don't want that kind of responsibility. Edinburgh Veg Fest, August 6th through the 7th in Edinburgh, Scotland. And newly announced, the World Veg Fest in San Francisco. I will be speaking. That's in October of 2016. I don't think they've announced the actual dates to that, but I got an email from the organizer saying he's got me on there as a speaker. And so it's World Veg Festival. I don't even think they have any information up, but that's, you know, it's kind of far off. So they're probably getting their little organizing wheels a-turning. Okay. Let's get into this, you guys. Let's get into this. I mention every week, in case you just joined me, the Dial Back Day, hashtag Dial Back Day, which is today. It happens to work out each week. I don't know why. This is my Dial Back Day, turning into sort of a Dial Back Monday through Thursday. I'm really digging it. It's no dessert for me. That was the thing. No dessert. No dessert for Sid, but not in a punishment way. It's actually a reward. And I want you to think about that. I wanted to mention that this week. It's like I'm rewarding myself with this. And like I always say, if it's not a reward for you, don't do it. You're not there yet. Go listen to my We're Not There Yet episode. You're not there yet. You're not there because you think it's restriction. And until you see it differently, and yes, it's about how you see it, not how somebody else sees it, because they might look at you and go, why are you restricting yourself? Everything in moderation. But you're going, I'm going to reward myself by dialing back for 4 days, because man, is that going to make me feel good. And that's a fact. And then this weekend, I'm going to reward myself by getting out of bed super early, like I did last Saturday at 5:30 in the morning, to go for a 12-mile run. I'm going to then reward myself by eating some stuff that I don't usually eat. Just, it's not part of my most of the time, but I'm, you know, letting loose a little bit on weekends, still eating in the heavy box realm, you guys. I'm going to reward myself that way too. Small stepping is nothing if not a lesson in self-care, a lesson in you understanding how worth it you are to take care of. And I'm not, I really don't want to make that trivial. I don't want to trivialize that because it is the crux of this whole thing. It's what makes my approach so starkly different from many, many other approaches, even small steppers who sort of remove the that part of it and just say, okay, you know, habit forming, break down habit into small incremental behaviors. And it's fine. I talk about that stuff too, but it's the backdrop that I'm always focusing on every week, which is the understanding of that you're worth taking care of, that these steps are about self-care. They're not just separate, detached behaviors that you're putting into your life in a incremental way. And it's fine. And I understand the science of behavior and I've done the reading on it. And that's why I've crafted my approach the way that it is. But it's way deeper than that, you guys. It's way deeper than that. It's way deeper than building in, you know, 10 deep breaths per day. There's benefit to that, but it goes way beyond that. And I always say that every small step is bigger than the step itself, way bigger than the step itself. Okay. And that makes even the smallest steps that you do, one deep breath per day, super profound. Okay. But it's always the way of we approach our lives as small steppers. It's the small steppers' way of getting up tomorrow morning and saying, I'm going to do the best I can for myself in this life, in this modern world, in this traffic, in this job, more on jobs later, in this family life I have, in this, you know, clubs I'm in or responsibilities I'm on or boards I'm on, whatever. There's a lot of stuff going on. How do we negotiate that better? How do we take care of ourselves in spite of some of those things? And some of those things are part and parcel to us taking care of ourselves. I mean, family life is essential to health and happiness. So anyway, that's where I'm going with this. Boom. But yeah, the dial back day. So what I was thinking about is, and I want you to think about this in terms of the dial back day, if you've tried it or not, don't, if you're not ready, but do, if you're ready, boom, it's all on you, baby. For me, and I want you to consider this too, craving. So many times I talked about, like, you know, I do fruit most of the day. If you're just joining me, you know, like today I had, this is my dial back day, but actually just every day in general, except for weekends, I'll just eat like 10 or 15 bananas. Today it was like 9 bananas and blueberries and 2 apples in a blender. I just blend them all up with water and just drank that all day. And I like it. I mean, I actually enjoy it. But here's the sort of demarcation of that. It's, to me, it's all about craving. It's like, is it the, so I always talk about how I enjoy the food I eat, but some of the food I eat is heavy box, almost heavy box enough where it's not, it hasn't crossed that line into just nutty nut nut, I can't stop myself. Okay. And it's, by the way, that's a human in the modern world issue. I don't have food issues. Okay, sure. You don't flavor your food. You don't combine your food. You don't plate it and make it look pretty. You don't cook it and combine, you know, put it every different flavors on the same plate and sort of take time. Sure, you don't have food issues. We all have food issues. The only question is by what degree, how much, you know, by degrees, how much of a food issue do you have? Is it debilitating for you? But to say you have no food issues in the modern world, you're an anomaly if it exists. And I just don't see most people. I've never met somebody, very rarely there are people out there exist who just like take an apple and eat food or take a cucumber and eat the cucumber. Usually it's prepared or dressed or something to sort of enhance it. And that's, and it, again, that's what it is. I do it too. And I don't want people to think that's not a good thing or that it's a bad thing or anything. I want, it's a reality. The only question is, can you figure out a way to make it work for you? Again, remember self-care. Can you think about things to do over time or transition into pictures of a way to live over time that are enjoyable still, but not just enjoyable about the taste, but enjoyable bigger picture? And that for me is totally the fruit that this fruit smoothies I drink. They're enjoyable. I like them, but I don't crave them. I don't wake up in the morning on Saturday morning after a 12-mile run and go, man, I cannot wait till I get home and so I can have my fruit smoothie. but I've never not liked a fruit smoothie. But the demarcation, I was thinking, it's just the craving. It's like there's craving food and then there's non-craving food. And I enjoy both. I really do. But the problems I ever have, and I do have problems, the bingey kind of, it's the craving. The problems I have are with craving. Here's the thing. When I'm drinking my fruit smoothie, I never go, oh my God, I should stop. I shouldn't do this anymore. My big freaking salad, I don't go, I should stop. I really shouldn't have another bite. I usually stop and I totally love it. And I really do like my big freaking salad. And I'm actually, funnily enough, I've actually found myself craving it sometimes. But again, that has to do with the dressing, the cashew ranch dressing. There's a video on that on YouTube if you're interested, Sid Garza Hillman YouTube channel. But there's craving associated with that, but it's not the same kind of craving as a loaf of sourdough bread with Earth Balance on it. It's just not. And again, I have cravings for food that is still heavy box, not that sourdough I just mentioned, but my red beans and rice and things like that, brown rice, it's all heavy box and it's great. But that's the stuff I'll tend to overeat, and it's really about the craving. It's not about the enjoyment. And the point I'm trying to make is it's not whether you enjoy or not enjoy, because I enjoy heavy box food. But it's for me, and what I want you to try on is, what's the food you crave? That's the demarcation for me. I enjoy it all. I'm not eating any food right now that I don't enjoy. I'm not stuffing food in my mouth, just going, I don't want it anymore, and just boom, just stuffing it in no matter what. I enjoy it all. But most of my days, most of the time, is eating food that isn't in fully squarely in the craving realm. And therefore, I'm able to be more in control of that food most of the time. And the reality of that, the result of that rather, is that I have a flat stomach. I have a lot of energy. I'm in really good shape. I don't get sick and I have no allergies. Visit my last episode if you want to hear about my history of allergies. So again, that's the demarcation for me. It's sort of the level of craving determines my level of struggle with said food. Boom. Okay. One, I wanted to continue from last week a little bit, the waiting game. I think I mentioned last week that I was going to revisit it this week, and I keep my promises. Mushroom coffee. That's annoying. It's annoying to me, even. And I can't even hear your annoyance because it's a one-sided podcast. Sad for you. Just shoot me an email. It's be like annoying. The small steps approach to life that I talk about every week, 122 episodes now, equals 122 weeks. The small steps approach to life is, and this is why I always say it's not all or nothing. In fact, it should never be all or nothing. It's not like all or nothing is ever even a goal. I've never met somebody happy who is an all or nothing person. I'm just telling you right now, even in parts of just all or nothing, I've never seen it add up. It's not like they're miserable, but usually it's an out of balance kind of situation and there's manifestations of that in their health or happiness, XYZ. Okay. But the small stepper's way is to incrementally ease in with certain behaviors and things that you want to do and you want to bring into your life and you think would enhance your life. And if you think that, it probably will. But over time, what you're doing via small steps, via a small steps list, via building on that list and incorporating more and more over time, blah, blah, blah. I just said blah, blah, blah. It's just like just devaluing my own approach. Blah, 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 Sid. Blah, 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 blah. Is you're removing distraction. It's a weird thing, you guys. Our modern world is just banking on distraction, literally banking, like put money in the bank out of distraction. We gravitate toward distraction. We love distraction. We love the movies and the entertainment and the quick and the light box food. Those are the things that distract us. They take us out of the moment. The small steppers way is to grab some of those moments back, but again, not all of them. We all need distraction. Why? As some sort of a freaking balance to just how nutty nut nut this world is. So it's not like, again, like I always say, it's approaching the natural. We can't just caveman it up on the streets of San Francisco. That ship's left the harbor. We're not in a natural setting. So to expect to be 100% natural, in fact, people who sort of come off as like, hey man, I'm all natural. It's like, no, you're just not showering. That doesn't equal natural. And usually that's inauthentic. I'll just say it right out there. Usually that's kind of an inauthentic kind of thing because it doesn't mesh well with the realities of the modern world. It's like, I am a guru and I'm getting on my private chartered airplane too. Okay, so you're building in life with less distractions, not distractionless, but less distraction. Okay. And the thing is about that is this is why it's part of the waiting game. It does slow down our perceptions of time to be more present in our lives. This is not a bad thing either, by the way, but it's uncharted territory for many people. It is a feeling of that's talk about intentional struggle or just uncomfortableness in the moment is you guys right now or next time you can sit down and do nothing for 5 minutes. Set a timer. Don't meditate. Don't breathe in some weird way or count. Just don't do anything. Nothing. Don't do anything. Just sit there. If you think about stuff, think about stuff. But set a timer for 5 minutes. It's the longest 5 minutes in the world. Same 5 minutes as when you're watching freaking a Friends episode rerun. Okay? And I think it's fantastic. But wow, what a difference in the way that time goes, how fast it goes without distraction when you are in the moment. And I'm finding this out now that I'm getting back sort of back into training, kind of for my own race because I'm going to run it the day before, but mostly because Sid, my training partner, is training for a 100-miler. So I'm sort of like, she's like dragging me by a leash. She's like, well, here's what we're doing on Saturday. I'm like, holy crap. So getting used to being out that long. Again, I got really used to that in my own training for my ultras of running for 4 hours by myself, no music. And that was on purpose. Music's not bad, but I wanted to see what that was like. And so I'm back into that bag. But it's like intentional struggle is in a way intentional presence. We are putting ourselves via small steps or via this system into intentional presence, which can be a struggle. It is not a norm for us in the modern world to sit there and have and just be like, I have nothing to do right now except for just be with myself. How often do you guys have time? Not have time. How often do you take time to just be with yourself with no distractions at all? I mean, I'm the same way. It's like I get in the car, I don't sit there and go, I'm just going to take this time. I go, which podcast am I going to listen to? What music am I going to listen to? I mean, that's just my immediate thing is my phone is in my hand. It's like Taylor freaking Swift. Boom. Or podcast. You know, it's just like it's immediate. And so, again, it takes a conscious effort even for me. Like sometimes I'll finish a podcast on my way home. Some podcasts will end and I'll still have 10 minutes of my drive, right? And I think, oh, should I start another? And sometimes I go, nah, I'm not going to start anything. And it's just amazing how hard that last 10 minutes is of like, I have this like knee-jerk reaction to start something else, to put some music on, to do something to fill that time. Hence, easing your way in because it's not what people are used to doing. We're not used to being with ourselves like that. It's a very, very weird situation because it's, at one hand, completely natural situation to be by yourself. If you're walking in the forest, you're present. You're in the moment. But in the modern world, we're just distracted. Everything's bombarding us. Forget about active distraction. How about passive distraction? How about advertisements? How about magazines? We don't sit in a doctor's office and just sit and deep breathe and say, I'm just gonna be myself. We grab the nearest magazine. I gotta pass the time. I gotta pass the time. What happens if you say, some of this time, I'm not gonna pass. I'm not gonna pass some of this time. Some of this time, I'm gonna use to think intentionally about my life. I'm gonna use some of this time to think about the things that I've always wanted to do maybe, but never did, and still can maybe. I'm gonna use this time to play the me, not me game and go through my day or days and say, there's some things that aren't me and some things that are me. Good. I'm going to use this time to do that game and learn how to do it without judgment and just learn how to do it for the knowledge of it that could then inform your actions and your steps later on. I'm not going to try to pass the time all the time. Some of the time, I'm going to pass the time. Some of the time, I want to bank it. I want to use it. I want to gain knowledge from it. But it's not a normal thing. And it's certainly not something that we're going to be handed. Somebody's not going to go, you know what? Listen, hey, you work for me. I want you to take some time off. It's paid. I know you're not sick. I want you to go home and just take some time. Think about your life. Think about how you want to live. Think about who you are. I just want you to take that time. You're such a valued freaking employee that I know you're not sick. And because you're not sick, I want to send you home just to have a day off for no reason at all. No reason, just because I know it's good for you and I care about you as an employee. Because see, that happens a lot in the modern world, right? Yeah. Okay. So what do we do? What do small steppers do in that situation? We go, yeah, I got this thing and I got that thing going. Okay, I better find moments because I ain't getting days, ain't getting hours, ain't even getting 10 minutes. Some of us walk in the door with children and responsibilities and everything else, but we do have 30 seconds. We do have moments where we're waiting for the subway. We do have moments where we're waiting for the bus. We do have moments where we're sitting on the bus, where we're in the car, where we're in a waiting room. We do have these things. We have time when we're on hold. These are the moments. These are the things that inform us, and these are the things that balance. I know it sounds weird, but they do. And anybody who's small steps is going to back me up on this. And most of my clients are going to back me up on that too. Most. Notice I didn't say all, because I don't have 100% success rate. Some people just ain't buying it. Not happening fast enough. It's not my bag. Fine. Got it. You got to be in a certain, I got a great thing going on right now with the clients. Great. Get dialed in, getting it right away. But that doesn't happen all the time. It's fine. It's a hard sell. Why? Because I am building in helping somebody, put that way, because I'm not doing it. I'm just facilitating you guys doing it, hopefully via this podcast too. But I'm helping somebody learn the system such that they're removing distractions. And some of those distractions are lightbox food, but some are other things too. But I'm not really even, I want to be clear that this process doesn't technically remove distraction. It brings in presence. And that's a very, very important point that you guys need to understand about this process. It's rarely, if ever, about removing or stopping or discontinuing food or anything. It's very rarely, if ever, about anything of not doing. It's all crafted, because this is intentional on my part, about adding in. It's enhancing. It's building. It's training for the thing, right? I talked about that last couple episodes. It's setting a foundation. It's building this thing that you're doing, this system. It's creating your life. It's creation of a life. It's a rebirth. I've talked about that. It starts with getting to know how you want to live your life, sure. But then it is the act of adding those things in to enhance, to shape, to build. That's huge. Now, is the effect that distractions are removed? Sure, that's an effect, but that's not your intention. You're not saying, I'm not going to look at my phone. It's not it. It is, I'm going to start to deep breath a few times a day. Take one deep breath, and then all of a sudden you find yourself deep breathing at other times in the day. And every time you take that intentional deep breath, that's one little notch less of distraction that just occurred. But really for you, it's one more deep breath that resets and regrounds you and makes you feel better. Dig? Good. But I'll tell you, by the way, in our efforts to be healthy and happy in this sort of mode of distractions and everything else I was talking about, diets are distractions. Make no mistake. They may be the healthiest diets in the world, and they may help you lose this amount of weight, but they're a freaking distraction, and they're built that way. When you're doing a diet, you're freaking doing a diet. There's just nothing else going on. You've got ingredient lists and shopping lists and da-da-da-da and recipes and what to do on day four. Trust me, they're not leaving you high and dry to twiddle your thumbs and go, what the hell do I do with this time off? That's why I ease people in. I mean, I've said it 1,000 times. I don't want you to jump in on this stuff, because it's hard. You have to learn how to be by yourself. You have to learn how to be in touch with who you are. That's a very weird thing. We don't ask the questions, who I am. We don't ask those questions because we think we need to be on vacation or sitting in a freaking cave in the Himalayas to do that. But we don't. We can ask the question today or tomorrow on our commute. We tend not to, because that's pretty heavy stuff. And if you're not ready to ask that question, don't. But that's the goal of this process, is to, more on that next week, by the way. But the goal of this process is to open you up to those kinds of questions in very small, comfortable ways, so that they don't just go like, that wasn't worth it. Whoa, too much information. You know, we like to say TMI. But we always say TMI in response to somebody else telling us something. We're just like, you didn't need to tell me that. That's very awkward and uncomfortable, what you just told me about your pants. But there's also too much information about ourselves that can come out too much too soon. That's my focus with you guys and with my clients is I'm helping sort of gauge the speed. You know, I have clients who want to go fast and I pull back the reins, and I have clients who, you know, maybe aren't ready. I go, remember, we can just up it by one deep breath. You can still, you know, teaching them forward momentum and things like that. But again, you know, it's rough stuff. There, if it goes too fast, more stuff can come out than you're ready to see. And that's the opposite of helpful, because you're going to shut down. You're going to be like, too much. Boom. Back to my old ways. Back to my old habits. Boom. And that's, again, why diets are such a distraction, is because they are filling your space up so much that you don't have to ask those questions. You get that you want to lose weight because you know that you are overweight. Fine. That's one thing. And then this diet you go on fills your whole life with everything that you need to do for that one little thing. You're being overweight. That's one of the things about your life. But your whole diet, your diet that you go on, is going to take up every free moment, because you're going to either be shopping, preparing, eating, studying, or freaking talking about your diet. What diet are you on? You look fantastic. Oh, I'm on the XY Blue Zone diet. Oh, that's fantastic. What does that mean? Well, that's, it means you have to buy these pills and you have to do this and this. And I did it, and my Aunt Martha did it, and she lost weight. Oh my gosh, she did. That's fantastic. She's just kept it off. Well, no, she gained it all back. Oh, okay. So you just talked about it. You wasted time talking about the diet, and then all the time that you take doing the diet. Massive. Again, a distraction. It is a distraction. If it's fun for you, do it. I said last week, do it. I'm not telling you not to. But understand that over time, the success of my approach hinges on your learned ability, and mine too, because I'm in the process myself, of how to be okay with ourselves in the moment, how to be present in the moment, how to be free of systems and free of rules and in a way, steps, you guys. I mean, this is the thing, like all the steps that I talk about, bringing in the steps list, ultimately, it is engaging you in your life to that eventually your step list may not even be existent, or maybe just like the smallest little thing. I mean, I told you last week, like my step list is not that big. I've dialed in a lot of stuff. So I don't have a big, massive steps list, because I've created a most of the time that works for me. But certainly there's things that I want to stay engaged with. Certainly there's things I don't want to lose. And certainly there's things that I want to bring in. There's still stuff that I want to do in my life. I'm not done yet. I'm not pulling the plug. Okay. I wanted to talk about, I talk about a lot, the conflict, or at least the difference that can exist between what we think and how we feel. There's a very weird thing in us, and I think that over time, in the small steps, my small steps approach, those things can lock up a lot more. Again, not all or nothing. But they can lock up a lot more, so that you're just like, I don't feel like that now. I talked about this with a client today. It's like, I always talk about the Matrix movie where he goes, am I going to be able to dodge bullets? And the other guy goes, this is like such a paraphrasing, I can't even tell you. But anyways, he goes, eventually you won't need to. And I mean, with my clients, I'm not trying to get them restrictive to teach them how not to eat cheese. I want to get them engaged in their lives, if cheese is a problem for them, for instance, to say, I don't feel like it anymore. No, not to say it, to actually not feel like it anymore. That actually happens, and it's happened with clients where they just engage in a way that they just go, I didn't feel like it, whatever it is, cheese, candy, whatever. I just didn't feel like it. That's powerful, because you're locking up your feelings with your knowledge, with your thinking. You don't want it, but you still feel like you want it. There's the conflict over time. You don't want it. No, you don't feel like it. Kind of cool. Okay. But what I was thinking is the power of our minds, and this is why ultimately the small steps approach that I have crafted really is an optimistic, hopeful approach. Sure, I talk about the difficulty to live in the modern world, because I want you guys to be aware that you can't go on autopilot. You just can't. You cannot go on autopilot and be healthy and happy in this modern world. There's too many economic forces at work that are trying to steer you otherwise. And look, I'm trying to make money too. I'm not dissing that. I'm just saying you have to be engaged so that you are directed into the places that actually make you happy and healthy. That's all. You can't turn it off because there are way more things in the modern world that are not going to make you healthy and happy. And there's way more things that are the cheapest game in town that are specifically not going to make you healthy and happy that you're going to be drawn to if you don't pay attention to your lives, if you don't understand how to be in the moment a little bit better, all of us. But what I was going to say is that I think it's incredible the power of the mind, and the reason why this podcast and my approach and my practice is hopeful is because I believe that through further engagement in our lives, and I believe that through further awareness, getting more in touch with who you are, how you define yourself regardless of how you've been living, there is an immense power in that to actually create real change, authentic change, not costume party change, not I'm going to dress like a cowboy because I'm a freaking cowboy, but being a cowboy. And this is all about being a cowboy, by the way. But hopefully that little tangent didn't completely just lose you in the moment. So let me rephrase it. Let's talk about being a princess. No, I'm joking. It's not a costume party. It's not I'm going to dress up like this person that I find myself to be. It's I'm going to actually over time make changes in my life that are real, that take time, years in the making. But then all of a sudden I look down and I go, holy crap, I'm just being this guy. And I never saw that. It was so subtle in its shift. You know, you do incremental steps, but also the change is incremental and the adjustment. All of a sudden you're like, I'm a person who exercises every day. How did that happen all of a sudden? And you're still back in the present. You know, you just boom, you're in the present. You're feeling good. How much power we have with when we apply our minds to our lives. Apply your mind to your life. If you don't apply your mind to your life, you're going to do what you feel like doing in the moment. If that were the case with me, most days I would probably go through the drive-thru at McDonald's because I feel like a Big Mac. I feel like having one. I crave a Big Mac, and that's for real. I don't have one for one reason and one reason only. I know I don't really want it. That's the, that weird separation. But look at what our minds have been able to do. I mean, look at the way we have redefined the roles of men and women. I mean, just look at that. Women didn't have the power to vote in the United States in the 20th friggin' century. And we didn't have to wait for that whole generation to die before a new generation of women came up and said, you were freaking voting. It changed in that moment. And I'm hoping it changed because there were enough people who said, this is not right. This is not who we are. We are not cavemen. I mean, this is the thing. Like, this is how absurd to me on many levels the paleo diet is. Because the paleo is like, if the paleo people did it, it must be the best. And it's like, well, look at the paleo people. Did they do everything fantastically? We've been able to look at and say, well, maybe traditionally or maybe prehistorically, women did this and men did this. I don't know. But that's not applicable today. It's not applicable in the modern world. Much of what we did before may not be applicable today. But there's only one thing that we have that can help us make that decision, and that's our freaking mind. That's our ability to judge and to say, you know what? It's not right because women are human beings. And so if we're going to have a democracy, they have to be involved. That's just what it is. And it takes the mind to do that because otherwise you have people who just feel like women, that's what they do. That's how I was. Have you ever heard somebody say like, I'm just racist. That's how I was raised. That's how I was raised. I'm just racist. That's how I was raised. Weak or strong, you guys? Weak or strong? Well, that's just what we've done. It's what we've done. Therefore, women shouldn't vote because they didn't have the vote yesterday. So therefore, why should they have it today? The only reason is if you can step outside of that model, step outside of the entire thinking of, well, it used to be, it has been, it's what we have done. If you can step outside of that whole thing, you can liberate yourself from tradition. You can liberate yourself from ritual if you want. And it's amazing to me if we can sink our teeth into this kinds of thing that how much tradition limits us, how much ritual limits us, keeps us from enjoyment and fulfillment and doing good things, passion. How much tradition and the rules that we have crafted ourselves and that now are in charge of us keep us from a more fuller experience of life. How amazing that we've been able to evolve away from what happened in the Paleolithic era. And I know what paleo is going for. They're saying, you know, physically we did this and we used to eat this. It's fine. It's not applicable in the modern world. Sorry, it's just not. We don't move our bodies to go find food anymore. So just that alone makes the Paleolithic diet freaking ridiculous. Because there was an expenditure of energy to get food that no longer exists today. That means it's not applicable. Now, can you look at generally, can we use common sense and say an apple is more natural than a Twinkie? I think so. I don't think we need to freaking beat this dead horse, you know, 1,000 times. I think we know what food is that's real food. I think we know what healthier food is versus unhealthy food. And I think it's just a matter of applying our minds in ways that allow us to make decisions about that stuff that benefit us, to actually make choices instead of being led around by craving, by behavior that was ingrained in us before we were able to make decisions for ourselves, by definitions of ourselves that existed before we consciously made a definition of who we are and how we want to live. Powerful stuff, you guys. I wouldn't come here every week if I thought, well, it's what you always did. I mean, you were raised eating Salisbury steak, TV dinners, so there's really nothing you can do about it if that's how you're raised. You love them, so therefore, there's nothing you can do about that, being miserable that you are. But yeah, just what, eat it. Hey, you know what? It's your problem. Instead, I'm like the most helpful person out there because did I say helpful? Hopeful. I'm super hopeful. I'm super optimistic because I've never worked with a client where I'm just like, nah, you don't have it. Sorry, you don't have it. In fact, I will go this far to say, I think it's in our natural design. That I always come back to the natural design of us as human beings. I think what makes us human, and a little guy named Aristotle would agree with me. Wow, that was so pompous. As I was saying it, literally just be like, I just want to kick my own ass. But Aristotle said the thing that defines us as humans is that thing, that mind that we have. Whatever, look, I'm not saying animals don't have it. I just say we know that about ourselves. Our ability to make choices in the way that we do is a definitive part of us as human beings. If we deny that and shoot from the hip, if we deny that and go with our gut all the time, then we are shutting off the very thing that allows us to move forward, that allows us to do something so, in retrospect, correct and morally right, like allowing that it was necessary, women to vote. We can look back at that now, but it's like, holy crap, how did they not vote? How is slavery ever okay? But there was economic forces and there was all these kinds of things and feelings and all these kind of irrational kinds of things. And then finally, it took people to go like, this isn't right, regardless of how we feel. And for us on an individual level, I'm making the same argument week to week here, which is some things that you're doing for yourselves, maybe, I don't know, I know for me, aren't right, no matter how I feel. They're not right for me. I'm doing actions virtually every day, and this, I don't even like admitting it because it feels crappy, but it's true. But there's things I do on a daily basis that I go, that's not right for me. That doesn't feel, I don't want to, that's not who I am. Not who I am. It's not right for me. I got to make a change on this, hence the small steps. I can't just say, I'm going to stop doing that because that, again, then we're in the fake it kind of realm. But I can say, I know that that's not me. That's the best place to start. And the only, in my opinion, the only place to start that's going to allow for lifelong change. Dig? Okay, good. All right. Cold mushroom coffee. Again, I'm just going to just telegraph everything that's going on. You guys with me still? Wake up. You're driving. Okay, jeez, get the freaking cruise control off. You're falling asleep during the podcast and you're on Highway 59 in Houston heading north toward Humble. All right, say no to nostalgia. Clever, you say? Thank you, I appreciate that. Nostalgia, see how I did that? Say no to, I'm exhausted. Horrible title, I don't know what to do. Look, I had to come up with an, I was, you know, I'm a clutch player. I wanted to talk about nostalgia this week, and I'm going to work on a video. I'm actually working on a video on this very subject. So look out for it on YouTube, hopefully in the next week or two. Maybe next week. Okay. Here's what happened. Quick backstory. In 2005, before I moved up to where I live now in the little town called Fort Bragg on the Mendocino Coast, I was living in Los Angeles and I was playing music and I was making a living acting, but I was playing music was my passion. And I had a band and we, you know, did okay in terms of that whole rigmarole comparatively. But never like made a full living and like all this kind of stuff. Okay. So the album we recorded before I left, and you guys, if you've heard this podcast before, have heard some songs on it, but it's never been released. It's finished, like mastered, done, finished. And we recorded this album about 6 months before I moved. And in fact, I didn't even know that I was moving, although I was definitely thinking about it. I had kind of had it with LA. My acting career was kind of on the down slope. I did pretty well for a while and it was starting to just kind of minimize and everything else. So this guy approached me and he wanted to do a documentary on my band. And so he started shooting some stuff during the recording and rehearsing for this album that we ended up recording. And so anyway, long story short is he recorded all this stuff and then he kind of just didn't really get around to doing it. It's fine, whatever. But at some point he sent me the tapes. He just said, here's all the tapes and just the raw footage. And I never looked at it. There was only two of them that I looked at because this guy, no, transferred them. The other ones I didn't, five, so there were seven tapes total. Five I did not ever see. Until last month I sent them away and had them transferred over because there's like mini DVD tapes. I don't even have a player for it. Transferred over to DVD. So last week I got these DVDs. I have not seen them. It's been 11 years, almost 11 years. And I start playing these things and I just have this rush of nostalgia, this rush of like, wow, like watching the band, it's just my old house, like just transported me back to this time. And it made me think that I wanted to talk about nostalgia because sometimes we can get caught up in the sort of, and we being me too, of course, this feeling of nostalgia, this feeling of like a longing, a wistfulness, a feeling of like, I want to go back and remember how good that was. I think that the one thing I wanted to talk about with you guys this week is that I want you to, if you get that way, and sometimes I do, but I wanted to get to the feeling of that. There was a couple things going on. First was, in this footage, I realized while I've had very fond memories of my music time, and sometimes I go, oh, I really miss that, watching this footage in many ways told a different story that I was like, oh yeah, I wasn't that happy. I wasn't that happy. That's very interesting to me 11 years later where I go, wow. And there's been some days where I'm just like, man, I was playing music. I was touring. I was playing live. I was doing recording. I had done. It was done. It was clear to me. And I'm actually toying around the idea of cutting it, like making it a little documentary on the making of the album or having somebody do it or whatever. Because it's very interesting to watch for me. But what's interesting is it became factual. It's funny. It's like my brain had made it this positive thing, mostly positive. But in watching the footage, it was yes, positive and creative in the way that I wanted. But I was done. You can see it in my face. I was done. And in the video I'm working on now of YouTube, I'll cut in some actual footage from that so you guys can see. But I was done. And you know, factual memories. I mean, what a great thing that I was able to see this because it sort of reset my clock a little bit and went, okay, I'm here now. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was when you are nostalgic, try to focus on the feelings that are inherent in that nostalgia. What was it about that time that I thought that I missed? Was it the music? Was it doing music? Or was it the feeling of freedom, of youthfulness, of innocence, of adventure? Was it those things? Because the question is now is, remember I said it's like some things are like not appropriate for today. Well, guess what? I have three children, my wife and I, you know, I love being with my family. I don't want to go on tour for 6 months. I don't want to see you guys, see in a month, see in 2 months. I don't really want to do it. Would I like to play live again? Yes. Would I want to be a quote, end of quote, musician on the road, beating my ass up in venues every night? No, I just don't. And I didn't then. I don't remember that well, but I didn't then because you can see it. But when we focus on the feelings of how it used to be, it ain't going to be that way anymore because life has changed. But Can you identify much in the same way that you identify when you want to lose weight? If you're a small stepper, you go, but why do I want to lose weight? Why do I want to lose weight? Well, I want to be happier. I want to feel better. I want to have more energy. All the things that you're really talking about, that you're distracted by a scale, but what you really want are the things that make you feel good. Well, the same thing occurs with nostalgia, with memories of how things used to be. They may not ever be that way again, and we've got to let go over time of the concrete parts of that, playing music per se, and get focused in on what is it about that time that I remember? What is it about that time that I value? Because that's me. And I want to get back to those things, hypothetically. I want to say, well, if it's youthfulness and freedom and innocence and adventure, can I feel those things again? Can I small step into things? I mean, that really essentially, by the way, guys, was my music step that's still unchanged after many, many months of playing music once a week. That's all I'm doing. But it reconnected me to that thing. It reconnected me to that feeling of creativity that I missed. It wasn't, I don't have to have the band and the exact studio that I had and the exact guitar I had, even though I still have it, but I don't have to have those things. Those are concrete worldly things. But can I get the same sense of joy? Can I reclaim that? Can I bring that? Or better yet, is it missing in the first place? Or maybe I have it in other places that don't look like music, and this process helps me appreciate those things better. We have jobs. We have responsibilities. We have realities in our lives now as adults that maybe we didn't have before when we are nostalgic about whatever time that was. That we didn't have. We have different circumstances now than we had then. I didn't have a child when I first started playing music for years. And even when this video was I was watching happen, I had one child. I didn't have three. I had one child. And she was a baby. It wasn't like, you know, I didn't have nearly the logistical realities that I have now. And I don't, I'm happy. I don't want to change anything. But I can't just say, I wish I had that thing again, because it would mean not having the other things that I have now. That's not okay with me. But can I recapture, or can I identify at least the feelings around that time in my life and say, I want those in greater quantities today? Because like I said, we have the responsibility. They're happening. We have a miserable job. I'll get into that in a second. We can't just up and quit. I got a family that I and my wife support together. When one of us quits, we're in, you know, it ain't pretty. So we can't just up and quit and be like, nah, go on, musician again. That was my best time, so I'm doing it again. You know, it's the old cliche of the football player. College football, that was my heyday. Well, why? What were you feeling like? Can you get that back in another? It looks different, but it's the same. Remember I talked about last week, the experiences are transitory. Can you create something in your life now that gives you that same feeling that you had back then? I think you can. No matter how busy you are, no matter your job, I think you can. And I think what happens is, with the modern world responsibilities, with the modern world job, which by the way, I got to find the Tom Robbins quote where he talks about jobs. Like, it's a new thing. Having a job, end quote. It's like we would work and we'd go from work to work and farms to farms and kinds of things. But this idea of like a job is a relatively new thing, and it sucks. Sorry, but it does. It's like a weird thing. See ya, I'll be at work all day sitting in an office. And if you love your job, you're lucky. Most people don't. And that's just a reality. You're just one of the lucky people who happens to like their job. But the fact of the matter is, job and work can be two very different things. So I want to talk about this for a second, because this is getting into it's getting into an email that I received from a listener. And he asked, you know, can you talk about, I have a job. You know, he said, I don't have a job. I have a job I don't like. Can you talk about that? And I think I've actually talked about it in the last few episodes, but I wanted to revisit here in the context of this whole nostalgia thing. You can feel in the modern world in today, you can feel trapped. You can feel like you're in this job, let's say, that you don't like, and you're miserable in it, and you get up every day and it's just a slog to get to work. And again, because of the responsibilities that often we have, we can't just up and pick up and quit, because just for the reality, I mean, we can, but again, what happens to everything else? I can quit my job. I can quit my job today. I wouldn't want to, but I could. But again, then I lose the house, and then I, you know, my relationship is strained, and my, you know, everything else. I can't provide for my children, all these kinds of things. I can quit. I have the freedom to do that. But boy, what an upset, big picture wise. So if you feel trapped, especially against the backdrop of nostalgia, against the backdrop of we used to be. When I was in college, I used to, God, it was great. I had more freedom, and I was reading books and knowledge and learning all these amazing new things. And now I have the job I don't like. Now, broken record, enter small steps. Because the fact of the matter is your job does not have to be your life. And when your job takes up most of your day, which it does most times, if you think that you have to balance 8 hours or 9 hours or 10 hours of your job with 10 hours of something else, you'll never do the something else because you don't have the time. The job takes up that time. But instead of thinking about how miserable your job is, again, how I don't want to go to work, how I don't want to do this thing, the small stepper's way is to say, that's happening right now. The job is happening right now. But what can I bring in to balance that out? What can I bring in? It doesn't have to be one-to-one time-wise. It can be 10 minutes of reading a book. It can be an online course that you take at night and you do it once a week to learn something new. Once you jump in on these things, guess what? Stuff opens up. All of a sudden, something else you want to do happens and you take time over time to do it, to learn a new thing, but you're no longer trapped. All of a sudden, you're no longer trapped. All of a sudden, your job is one of the things that defines you, or maybe stops being something that defines you altogether. Because all of a sudden now you're using your free time and you're no longer passing the time, all of it, with distraction. You're engaging and realizing how much actual time you have to do cool stuff with. So you jump in on projects and things that are not, again, they don't take one-to-one time, but you can do something. And if you buy what I'm selling, not monetarily, but if you buy what I'm selling, which is that the smallest of steps has profound effect on your life, you may research a new career for 5 minutes a week because it's more than you were doing. And that quickly turns into 10 minutes a week, to an hour a week, to an evening a week, to whatever. And you look forward to doing that because it gives you life and it gives you joy and it gives you all the things maybe you used to have that you remember. So we can focus on the job we don't like, and we do, and I do too. And I like my job, but there's parts of my job I don't like. Fine. But I always say, there's enough other stuff I got going on. That's my savings grace. When I was an actor in LA, you know, I was a musician. I was making my living acting. So it was weird. I remember my agent in LA used to always say, you do well because you have other stuff going on. He always used to tell me this because my eggs weren't all in that basket. I didn't really give a crap if I didn't get a certain job. But he had all these other actors that were just like, just because that's their dream and they had nothing else going on. There was no balance for them. Well, I had other stuff. So I was like, great. So I got work almost because I was just like, yeah, great. I'll take, yeah, good, good. But I had other stuff. And what I coach people to do on a private basis is develop the other stuff. Don't make it about the food because that's the thing that you came to me for because you want to lose weight. You think it's all about food. We're not going to touch food right now. We're going to make it all about the other stuff. We're going to bring all that stuff in so that food comes back down into the place it should be. If you have a job that you hate and that's destroying your life, it's because that job has power over you that you don't need to let it have. And you can take your job and over time by just leaving it where it is and bringing up all the other things that you want to do and can, if you small step it, then all of a sudden the job starts to sink down and you're in a different place when you go to that job. And in doing these other things, things open up for you such that maybe just something you didn't, I never thought I was going to be a freaking nutritionist. I mean, look at what happened to me. I'm happy now doing what I did. I never thought I would write a book on a philosophy of health. Never, never, never in a million years. I mean, so not, I'm putting on an ultra marathon. If that's not out of the realm of complete possibility for me, I can't even tell you. It's so weird that I'm directing, running an ultra marathon. Completely not on my radar ever up until 2 years ago, even. So these are the things, you guys. This is the thing, is how do you bring in things in your life in spite of the job that you don't like, in spite of the responsibilities you have? Can you bring in by steps power back to your life, choice, knowledge, joy, fulfillment, experience. Yes is the answer. Yes. All right. One last thing before I sign off for this week. And this is totally about nostalgia. So this is part of the inspiration of this week's episode, which is we had some deaths in the world, and kind of in a weird way, like they just kind of kept coming over the last 2 weeks. But Glenn Frey from the Eagles and David Bowie and Alan Rickman. And I love Alan Rickman. Look, David Bowie, great. Glenn Frey, great. I'm not a huge Eagles fan, never was. David Bowie, a fan, but not really like that big a fan. Alan Rickman, love him. But I was just actually talking about this with a client. It was so fully coincidentally because my client was kind of depressed because he was a huge Eagles fan and he was really bummed, like in a real way, bummed that Glenn Frey passed away. And I was like, that's so weird. He and I are the same age, happens to be. So I was like, well, guess what? David Bowie did that for me. And again, not even like a big David Bowie fan, but the death of a guy that just been in some, it's just like they're a fixture. Like, yeah, David Bowie. And the fact that he's not around is kind of a weird thing. And you can get very nostalgic of saying, like, it took me back to the time. I remember his music. I grew up in the 80s. So David, you know, was like there and school dances and just like all this stuff, right? It was a very weird nostalgia 2 weeks for me. I don't know why. I had the footage of my band and then David Bowie dying. And it's just like this weird thing of, you know, this fixture's gone. And guess what it does, you guys? It brings you to present. It does shine the light on you now, you at your age, you and in the world today. And it can be uncomfortable. And I am blessed to have the go-to of my wife and children and the things that I enjoy doing in my practice and everything else, because I don't want to be hung out to dry with nothing else of value to be like, and David Bowie's dead and I have nothing else on top of that. But it was a feeling, there was a feeling of nostalgia. There was a feeling of sadness, almost in a kind of a deep soul, profound way. And again, I'm not even a freaking David Bowie fan, but it was just like losing that guy, who I do respect, by the way, as an artist, but it really wasn't even about that. It was like, this is the thing of just in the world, and now he's gone, and it shakes up the order of things. I'll put it that way. It shook up the order. It's like, no, that he's supposed to be here for at least a lot longer. He wasn't even old. He was 69 years old, for crying out loud. That's not supposed to happen yet. It shakes up the fabric of what we sort of count on day to day. And it's, again, all the more reason to engage in your life, to develop your life, to grow yourself, to create yourself who you are via being a small stepper, because you need that stuff less and less the more you have for yourself. You're not as broken down by these things that occur and are going to occur. Sadnesses and tragedies and all these kinds of things are going to occur. And the small stepper's way is to say, yeah, they're there and I'm going to be sad about them because that's appropriate, but also I'm going to not let them debilitate me. And I'm going to be engaged in a way that it doesn't feel like a loss of everything. It feels like a loss of something. So farewell to those guys. But anyway, I wanted to leave you with this quote by David Bowie. And I love, absolutely love this quote. So I'm going to leave you with this today. So before I say this quote, I'm going to just tell you guys, if you have any questions or comments, email me, podcast@sidgarzahillman.com with any questions or comments. I appreciate the donations I've been getting and the support in general and emails. I love hearing from you guys. So I'll be back next week, but I'm going to leave you with this quote, all right? This is by David Bowie. If you feel safe in the area you're working in, you're not working in the right area. Always go a little further into the water than you feel you're capable of being in. Go a little bit out of your depth. And when you don't feel that your feet are quite touching the bottom, you're just about in the right place to do something exciting. All right, you guys. I'll be back next week. In the meantime, be well.
I laid you down, and I washed you down, and I set aside a silent cry. Then I sprinkle the rain, the faint darkness ahead, the faint darkness ahead. Circling around you, kept kneeling beside you. All I remember. Sprinkle the rain, the faint darkness ahead. This I can't chase from my head. Crawling away. shine, shine.